Yes, you are listening to KTO 104.3. I am Ms. G, and I am bringing you Left Hanging. And tonight, I'm going to be reading from a wonderful author by the name of Amy Binder. So, I'll give you a sec to get settled, and then I'll be right back with my stories. Stay tuned, please. Hi, this is Ms. G, and I am back with a story for tonight at Left Hanging 104.3 in Juneau, Alaska. The title of the story tonight is The Meeting, and the author is Amy Binder. This particular story is out of her book, Willful Creatures. The woman he met a woman. This woman was the woman he met. She was not the woman he expected to meet or planned to meet or had carved into his head in full dress, with a particular nose and eyes and lips and a very particular brain. No, this was a different woman, the one he met. When he met her, he could hardly stand her because she did not fit the shape in his brain of the woman he had planned so vigorously and extensively to meet, and the non-fit was uncomfortable and made his brain hurt. "Go away, woman," he said. And the woman laughed, which helped for a second. He trailed the woman for a few days, saying it was because he had nothing else to do. But in truth, he did have plenty to do, and he did not know why he was trailing her. His brain made a lot of shouts and static about his brain's own idea of hair color and sense of humor and what animals the woman he met would like, mammals. And his brain's own idea of how to be a member of the world and everything that was sort of like him and yet different enough. And still, this woman he met was the woman he met, and however you try, you cannot unmeet. His brain was in an utter panic at changing. His brain was very pleased with its current shape and did not want to shift, not one bit. This woman liked reptiles and fish. What sort of decent human being could possibly like reptiles and fish? He said, "Go away, woman." "You go away," she said, shooing him with her hand. "You're the one following me around all the time." They went on a walk, or rather she went on a walk, and he asked if he could join her. Together, over the small bridge which ran over a dry stream and looked down at rocks which jutted up like teeth. She talked significantly more than he expected the woman he met to talk, and so while she was talking, he thought, "She is surely and clearly not the woman for me." Blabbermouth, he thought. She paused at an oak tree and said, "Did you stop listening?" And so he started listening again and said some stuff himself about this, about that. He liked talking to her. The woman said she did not know why she liked him, as he was being something of an irritation with all this static in his head, and he said he was sorry. He liked her, too. But his brain kept rejecting her, and he did not know what to do about that. The woman said, "Please, would you shut your brain down for 5 seconds and let the world participate a bit?" "No," said the man. "I control the world." The woman's laughter bounced off the rocks below. The man laughed too, but inside, he still meant it. The woman said goodbye and went to her cottage and made some spaghetti, and the next day, guess who was at her door? Good afternoon. How are you? How are you? The spaghetti was fine-tuned, and she was beautiful in the filtered sunlight, and they made love that afternoon with the green sunlight through her green curtains. Her body was new to him, and he did not like the way her shoulders were so broad, and he very much liked the slope of her hips, and he was scared because he did not know how to navigate the curves they made together. Later, when he would become a ship's captain on the waves of the water of their bodies, it turned out that those broad shoulders were the thing he would think of with the most lust and the most tenderness. Those broad shoulders would be what he would recognize in a crowd if they all had paper bags on their heads. Those broad shoulders he could spot across an ocean. The following day, after the green curtain day, he was back. They ate cold spaghetti out of paper cups on the stoop. He said, I just don't know if I want to marry you. She snorted. What? He said. I'm sorry, but I'm just not certain that you are my future wife. She spit some spaghetti out on the stoop in a little red clump, and he thought it was gross, and she was laughing again. Not with, definitely at. He said, I always thought the woman I'd marry would hit me easy, in a bolt of lightning, and there if not lightning, there is not even thunder, there is not even rain. It all feels, well, foggy, he said. And she said, what makes you so sure I want to marry you? And he said, oh, hmm. And she said, why would I consider marrying a man whose brain is so bossy? I need a man with some calm, she said. He looked at her nose, thin and long, and her eyes, thin and long, the other direction, and her hair was straight and long and shone. He had a bit of spaghetti off her fork. They sat for a while on the stoop and watched the lizards skit and scat until the mailman came by and delivered some letters. Two bills and a postcard from her cousin on an island. She made faces at the bills and laughed at the postcard and scrutinized the little type in the upper left-hand corner, telling her where it was, and then looked at the picture on the front for longer than he had ever looked at all the postcards of his entire life. When they made love that day, it was one step closer to making sense, and she brought them some wine afterward, and they sat and watched the sunset through the green curtains, naked with deep-bellied glasses of wine. The green darkened into black. He let his hand trace each of her vertebrae, and she did not say, that tickles, stop, like he thought she might. She just looked out the muted curtain, and her hair swished at an angle. He moved his fingers down her whole spine, one by one by one. And during the time it took to do that, his brain remained absolutely quiet. It is these empty spaces you have to watch out for, as they flood up with feeling before you even realize what's happened, before you find yourself at the base of her spine. Different. You've just heard me read The Meeting by Amy Binder. And I'll be right back. This is Left Hanging and Ms. G here at 104.3 in Juneau, Alaska. Thank you. Hello again, this is Ms. G, and I am bringing you Left Hanging this evening. You're from 104.3 in Juneau, Alaska. I hope you enjoyed that last story, The Meeting by Amy Bender. Her work has been described, she's been described like Hemingway on an acid trip. Her choices are twisted, both ethereal and surprisingly weighty. That's from the Los Angeles Times. I picked up her book and I just absolutely loved the strangeness of it all. So I hope you did also. And let's see, I have another story that I'd like to read from her collection of short stories. The next one is titled Hymn, H-Y-M-N. The unusual births hit the town all at once, all the mothers not recognizing their babies. "Mine is so tall," said one, craning her neck. "Mine so blonde," said the dark next, squinting. "Mine made of paper," announced a fleshy third. "Mine built of glass," trembled another. One with a child who had no eyes but ears so acute they could measure blinking. Another with a daughter who could, at will, turn into objects like brooms and light bulbs. Soon, at the playground, the children could not recognize what made the other work, and they eyed one another from behind the swings, from beneath the tire sculpture. When they were older, they took over the village and ran it perfectly. Little did their mothers and fathers know that when they'd eaten the foods and breathed the air and felt the feelings and made the love that created their children, they were, for once, in perfect synchronization. The son of glass was a doctor, and all could see inside his body while he worked on theirs. The daughter of paper was a scholar, and each book became a part of her wrist and arm and breast. The blonde son lit the town for those months when electricity was no longer an option. And the daughter of great height cooled the moon with streams of her breath when it grew too hot from a passing meteor. The changeable woman was always on hand to provide the most needed machine or tool. The child with divine ears listened to the soil and pointed to where he heard the seeds unfurling with pleasure. "Plant here," he told the one with the longest arms who could reach straight into the heart of the dirt. In later years, that eyeless one sat beneath the forest of trees he could not see, but could take deep inside his lungs. And when the sadness was unbearable, it was only he who could soothe the villagers, who could hear the type of tears by the pace of the blinking, and know in which manner to offer comfort. Their parents were gone by then. The world had fallen into sense and sorrow. "Mother," they said, "father." "This is our decision," they said, bowing to each other. Once a year they stood together, holding hands as best they could, with the new babies crawling on the floor at their feet, the babies of many heads, the ones made of words, the clay blobs, the triplets of air who would rush past and sweeten your breath, your breathing. "Who's that strange one you made, Ma?" "Why, Pa?" "That creature is your own flesh and blood. Even though it has neither flesh nor blood, still it is yours." Then the grand feast with foods of all kinds, even for the several who did not eat food, but survived only on the quality of listening. They usually hovered at the corners, and when they grew wan and skinny, it was a reminder to focus. On this day, they filled up visibly, fat and happy. No one needed to say it, but the room overflowed with that sort of blessing, the combination of loss and abundance, the abundance that has no guilt, the loss that has no fix, the simple tiredness that is not weary, the hope not built on blindness. "I am the drying metal, you the unspoken apology. He is the fluctuating distance between mother and son. She is the first gesture that creates a quiet that is full enough to make the baby sleep. my jeans, my love, are rubber bands and rope. Make yourself a structure you can live inside. Amen. You've just heard me read Him by Amy Bender. And I'll be right back with more here at Left Hanging 104.3 Juneau, Alaska. Left Hanging here at 104.3 Juneau, Alaska. And tonight I wanted to read you a poem. It's a wonderful little poem and something I have to remember. This is Cats Like Angels, and it's a poem by Marge Piercy. Cats, like angels, are supposed to be thin. Pigs, like cherubs, are supposed to be fat. People are mostly in between. A knob of bone sticking out in the knee you might like to pad. A dollop, a flab hanging over the belt. You punish yourself. One of those rubber balls kids have that come bouncing back off their own. Paddles rebounding on the same slab. You want to be slender and seamless as a bolt. When I was a girl, I loved spiny men with ascetic grimaces. All elbows and words and cartilage, ribbed like cast-up fog gray holes, faces to cut the eyes blind, on the glittering blade chins of Aegean prows bent on piracy. Now I look for those men whose easy bellies show a love for the flesh and the table, men who will come in the kitchen and sit, who don't think peeling potatoes makes their penis shrink. Men with broad fingers and purple figgy balls. Men with rumpled furrows and the slightly messed look at ease of beds recently well used. We are not all supposed to look like undernourished 14-year-old boys, no matter what the fashions ordain. You are built to pull a cart, to lift a heavy load and bear it, to haul up the long slope, and so am I. Peasant bodies, earthy, solid, shapely dark glazed clay pots that can stand on the fire. When we put our bellies together, we do not clatter, but bounce on the good upholstery. That was Marge Piercy's Cats Like Angels. This is Ms. G. I'm bringing you Left Hanging this evening here at 104.3 in Juneau, Alaska, and I'll be right back. Stay tuned. Thank you. Angie. I'm back with more from Left Hanging, and I have one more poem by Marge Piercy. It's titled Complaint of the Exhausted Author. Pain turns on its dull red warning light, dim and steady in the dark. My back clanks like an old coal furnace. My brain is a cellar bin, empty except for desiccated spiders. Even the mice have dropped their neat tracks and shipped out. Everything I have to burn is burned, and the house grows cold. I remember real hunger, the urgency, then the lassitude, a hollow pain roaring like a distant sea, and through it all the sense of the body cutting its losses, of the sails shutting down one by one, the lights going out. That hunger was bone chip sharp, not simple, not of the bargaining flesh. This hunger snivels and whines, the quaking tail low but wagging. Cur of the heart has desires that hide and abide. A lion in yellow dog clothing, who will be fed? Don't think because I speak strong words that I am always strong. What moves through me moves on and leaves me empty as a storm sewer when the rains have gone. My ribs squeal like a bad accordion. Feed me, mother, me. Coddle my fears. Or I will go like a mole through the garden, chewing off roots for spite. I will crawl into the rafters and become a leak dripping on your chest in bed. I will turn into a fat, rheumatic, yellow dog who sprawls all day on the kitchen floor, in front of the stove, in everybody's way. And if you make me move, I will fix you with a baleful blind eye and sigh and limp. I will turn into a cough you can't get rid of, or a fog bank that broods on the house. At night, I will take my old form and steal to the typewriter to write damp, querulous poems like this one. Feed me before it's too late. That was Marge Piercy and Complaint of the Exhausted Author. So this has been Left Hanging, and we have 5 minutes on the clock, but instead of reading you more as my voice goes away, I'm going to leave you with some music. So until next time, stay true, stay safe, but if you can't be good, don't get caught. Good night till next time.